one of my promises to the listeners of the Fueling Forward podcast is that I will never promote something unless I firmly believe in a brand and their product, have tried it myself, and feel like there is science to back it up. That's why I'm proud to partner with Momentous to bring you this episode. They invest in NSF certification, meaning every batch is tested for heavy metals, harmful additives, and label claim accuracy, and is the reason they're trusted by all 32 NFL teams and collegiate sports team dietitians all over the country. I personally use and love Momentous protein powder as a way to support my fueling and training goals. They also have a great post-workout recovery powder that has carbs and protein all in one. Not only does it taste great, but it actually blends well into things unlike other protein powders I've tried that taste gritty or chalky. Go to livemomentous.com and try it today at 20% off with code FUELINGFORWARD and start living on purpose. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm your host, Maddie Alm, registered dietitian and former professional runner. I'm so excited for you guys to hear our interview with today's guest, Allie Ostrander. Allie grew up running in Alaska. She was a 10-time Alaska state champion, and she was the 2014 NXN champion. She also won the U20 World Mountain Running Championships in 2015. She went on to run for Boise State, where she was a 13-time All-American and 3-time NCAA champion. After Boise, she went on to run professionally for Brooks and ran with the group Brooks Beasts in Washington. She was a 5-time U.S. Championships competitor and member of Team USA at the 2019 World Championships in Doha, Qatar. Right before the Olympic trials in 2021, Allie opened up about her struggles with an eating disorder and going into treatment. Today's episode, Allie shares her story, struggling with a long-term eating disorder, what recovery has looked like for her, and where she is today, ultimately having recently signed a new contract with Wazelle. A trigger warning for anyone listening, today's episode does talk about an eating disorder and recovery, so if you feel like you're not in a place to hear this, this may not be a good episode for you. Thank you guys for being here, and I hope you enjoy today's episode with Allie. All right, Allie, welcome to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm so excited to have you here today, and welcome to Boulder.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm really excited. When you said you were starting a podcast, I was very stoked.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. And you're somebody who immediately came to mind even before this podcast was off the ground, because the message you've been putting out there for the last like 3 to 5 years has been really incredible, really inspiring. And a lot of athletes I've worked with have brought you up in our sessions and saying how much of an inspiration you've been to them. So it's going to be really fun to talk today.
Yeah, that makes me so happy to hear.
Yeah. Well, let's just start with who you are as a person and how you got into running. I love hearing people's backstory with running. Usually it doesn't come up in the way you would expect.
Yeah. Well, growing up, I was like really into a bunch of different sports. I did like soccer and basketball and skiing and running. I'm from Alaska, so that's why the skiing got in there. But I had an older sister who was like 3 grades ahead of me, Taylor. And so at a certain point in school, like she started doing middle school sports and my mom was helping coach like the cross country and track teams. And so I could either like go to an after school program or I could just like go to the practices with them. So I decided to start going to the practices and I would like run with the middle school team a little bit. And I just really enjoyed it. And I was just doing like, you know, the community races or whatever. It wasn't like anything crazy, but that's kind of how I started getting into it. And then like, as I went through middle and high school, I just got more invested in it. And like soccer was kind of my other favorite sport. And I'm from a really small town and it got to the point where like, we just didn't have enough girls to make a full team anymore, not in the town, but just like interested in doing it.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of like leaned into running and really got into that and eventually went to Boise State for college.
That's so cool. I feel like growing up in Alaska is so unique. I don't really know anything about Alaska. I've never been there. What was it like during the times of year that it was really dark? How was that with running?
Yeah. So growing up, like since I had always experienced that, I like didn't really think it was weird. And it didn't bother me that much. But now when I go home and visit in the winters, I'm like, how did I deal with this? It is like so dark because It's not like we're in like South Central Alaska, so it's not as bad as it is in the north, where like there are literally times where the sun doesn't come up. But like, yeah, where we are, it'll be, sunrise at like 10 a.m., sunset at like 3 p.m. So you get like sunlight. But yeah, it was definitely a different sort of experience. But I think one thing that was actually really good for me is that, like, growing up in Alaska, and also I was in high school from like 2011 to 2015. And so social media really only got big like partway through high school for me. And even at that point, like, it was really a social media, like keeping up with your friends, sort of, not like as much about like comparing to like, other people that you don't even know. And so I was really separated from things, especially like running news and culture. And I didn't really realize that like all the other high schoolers were running year round or doing indoor track or anything. So like all winter, I just played basketball, and like I didn't think that was weird at all. So people are always like, "How did you train in the winter?" And I'm like, "Well, I would run like 1 or 2 days a week sometimes, but for the most part, I just played basketball for like December, January, February, and like half of March." So
Wow.
I didn't notice the darkness as much because we were in a nice bright gym.
Yeah, those nice fluorescent lights really set
Oh
the
yeah.
tone. That's
Love
so cool. Like, I love when there's multiple sports going on. I think it's so important for development of young athletes to have multiple ways that you're moving and just not be so single-minded on running at such a young age. And it sounds like for you, that was a huge asset as well. And, obviously we're here to talk about nutrition. So I'm curious, growing up in such a small town, kind of more isolated in Alaska, what was your experience with food like growing up?
I think like honestly, my parents have like really solid relationships with food. And so that was like never something that was like modeled in a bad way for me, which I'm really appreciative of. And I never got any pressure from like coaches or anything to lose weight, but I do think like being from a small town, there were also like certain ideas from people that were definitely perpetuated. Like people are less generally like less open-minded, and I think like a lot of the stereotypes of running were like very much believed by people there. And so when I started like doing well at a pretty young age, like people would talk and comment about my body because I was always pretty small growing up. But when I started getting those comments about my body and how like the size was what made me successful, and how like when I grew I wouldn't be as successful anymore, like that really stressed me out, and it definitely impacted my relationship with food. Like those sorts of comments and that commentary in general was definitely what kind of drove me to eventually get an eating disorder.
Yeah, that's so hard to hear. And I'm curious, how old were you when you started hearing that?
Like 5th and 6th grade.
That's like 10, 11.
Yeah, it's really young. And I think like the sad part about that is it's not like shocking. I think that's like a really common age to start hearing those sorts of things and having those sorts of thoughts.
Yeah, it really is. And it's just so crazy to think that people think it's okay to say those things. And one thing that I really loved that you talked about a while ago was, commentators saying things about bodies. And you made a comment like, saying things about people's bodies instead of their performance is lazy. And I thought that was such a good way to explain it. There are so many better things to talk about. And I really resonated. You wrote this incredible letter called Dear Body, to Miles Blunt. That was such a great, great post. And there was a part of that where you said, I feel like I'm only worthy because I'm small. And that was something that resonated with me. And I know a lot of people that I work with feeling like your identity is wrapped up in being a small person and that making it really difficult to accept or experience body changes. So, what was that like for you? Was that a burden to carry?
I feel like it definitely was a part of identity. And I think like just you start having these thoughts, and at first it's kind of like actionable almost. Like you're thinking about it, like, I need to stay this size, or I need to do this, I need to be good at running. And then after a while, it becomes so habitual. And then it turns from habitual to, like you said, identity of like, this is who I am. Like, I have to do this because that's me. And so I think like the longer it goes on, the more ingrained it becomes and the more difficult it becomes to change. So I definitely think that like when I eventually did recover, it was so hard to let that go because it did feel like a part of myself. And I mean, like in a way, it kind of is. But I also think at the time, like it had been ingrained to the point where like I was still like participating in these behaviors and having these thoughts, but I was also like exhausted of it and exhausted of the cycle of like getting injured and like not being able to train consistently and having like inconsistent workouts and like all this stuff to the point where it was almost a relief to like have a reason to let go of that, which I was still like terrified, but I also was like, I don't want to hold on to this. I just feel like I have to, you know?
Absolutely. That's a theme I hear a lot, is that permission to let go of something like that. That's just been a really heavy weight to carry. And it sounds like you carried that for a really long time, starting at a really young age. So once you got into high school running and you started, seeing more success and winning a national championship, how was your relationship with body image and food at that point?
So I think like freshman year of high school, like my sister kind of started realizing like there was something going on and she had like a very serious talk with me. So after that, I felt like I did like make some changes and try to be a little bit healthier, which like I was still like super controlling and stuff, but I feel like there's always levels to it and I don't want to go into like numbers and stuff because that's obviously triggering, but I just tried to like actually fuel myself a little bit better, but it was just like everything was so much of like the bare minimum of like it taking a step up wasn't really that wasn't going to be that helpful for me. Like it still wasn't enough and I was still restricting, but I did feel like freshman year was worse than like sophomore, junior, senior years. And like I never got injured in high school, and I think part of that was because I was playing basketball in the winter, and then also probably part of it was because I was just pretty young and like the damage that was happening, I wasn't necessarily seeing the repercussions yet. But like high school running went well and I like improved every year and really enjoyed it. So that was fun. And I also like I said, was pretty separated from things. So I didn't do like crazy mileage or anything. For most of high school, I was probably running like 30 to 40 miles a week, and just doing like whatever the workouts on the team were, you know, not like hiring a private coach or something. But it was, I mean, honestly, high school running was really fun.
Yeah, and you even did some trail running in high school, right?
Yeah, I would do like one race during the summer in Alaska called Mount Marathon. Like Alaska has like an incredible summer series of trail racing, but the most popular and famous one is Mount Marathon. And I did that every year growing up.
Wow, and you made the world mountain running team as just when you graduated, or were you still in high school?
Yeah, so for the junior U20 team, it's like what's it called? It's an application system. So I applied and like having done Mount Marathon combined with like my track times, they let me on the team.
Well, you ended up going on to run in college at Boise State, which is another mountain town. I'm seeing a theme here with mountain towns. what was that transition from high school to college like for you? What was your freshman year like?
Well, like from a running side of things, it went super well. I think that like I was able to see a pretty big jump because I had like I was training quite a bit more, like more consistent, higher mileage. More workouts during the summer and then like training all winter as well. Like I started to see like really big improvements because I just hadn't been like training year round in high school. But like from a mental health side of things, I feel like big life transitions like that can be really hard, and kind of triggering. And I know like going into college, I felt like a lot of pressure on myself of kind of what you mentioned earlier of like holding on to this identity of like being small and holding on to my small size. And I felt like, you know, there's all this like verbiage around when you go to college of like freshman 15, and like everyone's like you gain weight when you go to college. So that like really stressed me out. And I feel like I overcompensated for it because like that was my way of coping, was like trying to really hone in on control around food. So from like mental health side, it didn't go super well, but the running transition went really well until like February, and then I got my first ever stress fracture, and that was like, I mean, I did not handle it well at the time. I feel like no one handles it well the first time they get a big injury like that, but I was like, what do you mean 6 weeks of no running? And it was, yeah, it was definitely hard. And like, I still have my training log from then, and I was writing the most dramatic notes every day. Like, reading them back now, it's so funny. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I was a drama queen, but at the time, it felt very real.
I mean, it is real. Injuries are so hard, and especially when you're in this transition period and running is sort of the constant, having that taken away is really hard. And I see this a lot with that transition from high school to college. You mentioned earlier your sister was a huge support system for you dealing with your relationship with food, and then going to a place where bigger town, more people, not near your family. Did that feel like that accelerated things for you with that poor relationship with food?
I definitely feel like going to college was like a step back from where I had been. And I also think like it's just, yeah, it's just different, like not being at home. Like you have so much more autonomy over like what you're eating all the time. Where like my parents were never like controlling or trying to make me eat or anything, but like at college you're really completely on your own with that. And also, like, I think the NCAA has gotten a lot better, but I feel like at the time I was in the NCAA, eating disorders were like very prevalent. And it felt so normal to be like participating in these behaviors and restricting in the way that I was, that I almost felt like I wasn't doing anything wrong, and felt justified in it. Whereas in high school, it definitely felt weird because I was kind of like the only person I knew doing that sort of thing. But then in college, I was like, oh no, okay, so this is the right thing to do.
Sort of like you're hiding in the masses where everyone is participating in that stuff. And that was one of my questions. What was the team environment like with food?
I feel like there, like I said, there wasn't pressure from coaches to be a certain size, but overall, generally, like the team relationship with food was not good. I would say, like looking back, probably like 80% of us were struggling. I don't want to make it seem like it's like super toxic or anything, because I don't feel like it was like, you know, we weren't getting DEXA scans telling us to like lose body fat or like having the athletic trainers tell us we needed to lose weight or anything. But I just think there was nothing done to like control it. And it just so happened that like that was also a time where no one was talking about it, and there just wasn't any sort of media saying like, oh, this can be really damaging and bad for you. So everyone was just kind of like, okay, I guess this is what we do. I don't know. It's
Yeah.
really sad.
Yeah, and I think that's really common. And I think just in the sport, I see this with teams. It just kind of ebbs and flows where you have years where there's a lot of people struggling and then years where the culture is better. And, you know, like you said, it's not always coming from coaches or staff. It can just be the people coming into the environment. And I think that's something I've talked about before with other people. It's that when you're transitioning from high school to college, having some tools in place to navigate an environment like that can be really helpful. So, you know, looking back on young Allie, what would be some advice that you would give her navigating that environment?
Yeah, I mean, I think like my biggest thing would just be like, I would want to go back to like when it all started, really, but
Yeah.
with being like, because I think at the time my biggest fear was like, oh, what if I don't improve every year? Like, what if I do like grow and mature and have a year where I get slower, or 2 years, or I plateau and like I don't get into the colleges I want to and I don't get scholarships? And like, I would just want to say like, it's for your long-term development and like growth and potential as an athlete. Like having like 1 year or 2 years that are a step back is such a small period of time, and it's like really like nothing to worry about. The thing to worry about would be that you can never reach your potential because you're just getting injured or you haven't like developed strong bones and muscles. Like it's so much more important to like build this really strong foundation when you're younger and then be able to reap those rewards when you're older. But as far as like college goes, I feel like at that point, I don't know if it would matter anything I had said. Like I feel like that it was so deep rooted that like I just at that point was not willing to change. And also like especially before I ever got injured, like there was nothing telling me that anything I was doing wasn't like the best, like fastest way to just be successful.
Totally. Yeah. And I definitely want to get into that. But I think, highlighting that long term, big picture is really important. And it's so hard when you're a young athlete, especially 16, 17, 18, still in your teen years, to think like, wow, when I'm in my 20s, 30s, this could impact me. We're not thinking that way at that age. We're thinking, I want this success now. And that's a really hard part of the sport. And then you combine that kind of high achieving personality trait of runners, and it can definitely spiral pretty quickly.
Yeah, it is crazy too. And it's like I like to think looking back like, oh, if I had had more information and like known like what this could do, maybe things would have been different. But at the same time, like when you are in high school, every season feels like the entire world. You know, it like feels so important. And like it is really important at that time. And so like yeah, I just don't even know like if I would have changed things if I had known more. But like, I like to think that I would have.
Totally. And I think something else that can be hard is you saw success in running despite dealing with these challenges. And, some runners or maybe even young Allie would look at that and say, I'm achieving because of these things, not in spite of these things. And you did go on in college to have three NCAA titles. You made your first world outdoor team for the Doha team in 2019. What was that like, kind of grappling with that disconnect between I'm doing, this stuff with fueling that I know probably isn't great, but I'm seeing success?
Yeah, so freshman year after I got that injury, then I like started training again. I ran at the 2016 Olympic trials that summer, and then that fall I got a sacral stress fracture. So that was kind of like when the coaches and athletic training staff were like, we need to get a DEXA scan, like we need to figure this out. So then I started like working with a nutritionist and a therapist for the rest of college, but it was very much like a checking the boxes sort of thing for me, like I have to do this to be allowed to train and compete, but I'm only going to do like the very bare minimum. And so I don't know, I kind of felt like at the time that I was like recovered, but I was really just like doing what I had to be allowed to compete. And so the rest of college was like I think better. Like I was definitely doing a little bit better job of like fueling myself, but I do think like at that point, I knew what I was doing was wrong, and that kind of weighed on me a little bit of just knowing like I'm not really setting a good example, or like I wouldn't tell anyone to do this, and that like marred it a little bit for me. With like obviously I was still enjoying like running and racing and having success, you always do, but it was definitely like in the back of my mind of I wish this like wasn't how I had gotten this success.
Absolutely. And runners are such rule followers that there's sort of that feeling of like, I'm breaking a rule, I'm doing something wrong. But at the same time, it's really hard to get yourself out of that pattern.
Yeah, I also think like throughout my college career, like it started to be like way more of a thing that people would talk about eating disorders and food and like body and stuff. And so I think like towards the end, there started being like this thing of people would say like, oh, like she's doing it the right way. I don't know if you like you heard that verbiage as well. And it started to be like almost like a dirty thing to like, you know, have these behaviors or an eating disorder when it's like, it's not like the person's really choosing this. Like at that point, it's so much of like, it is a mental health disorder. Like their brain chemistry has changed. So I don't know. Then there was like a lot of shame and guilt around that, and everyone would try to be like up on their high horse. It was like, I don't know. It was a weird dynamic.
That's really hard to navigate into balance, and I think you've highlighted such an important point, and it's hard to share that, but I think it's so important to be aware of the fact that social media doesn't always tell the whole story. You know, you were having this success and people were saying, "Oh, she's doing it the right way," but internally you were still really struggling. And I think it's important for athletes to hear that what they're seeing on social media really might not be reality. So while we were seeing one side, tell us what the other side was.
I would say like throughout the like last few years of college, I definitely struggled a lot with like body image and comparison because I think like social media was starting to be more of like, oh, you like can follow these pro runners and like other runners you compete against. And I feel like I was constantly comparing myself and feeling like I didn't look like a runner, I didn't look elite enough. And so always feeling like I needed to be smaller, but also knowing that like I would just get injured, but like this constant battle of like restricting as much as possible, like trying to like ride the line as much as I could, and like, you know, really doing the opposite of what you should, which is like fuel so that you can run. I would run so that I could like fuel almost. You know what I mean? Like it would
Absolutely.
be the bare minimum to be able to run. And yeah, it just like I said, it wore on me, and it was also just like kind of exhausting at this point because I also think like I don't know if this is like the normal way to think about this, but I feel like for years I've been trying to hold on to this body from when I was like, you know, 14 years old, and I feel like it got more and more difficult the older I got because it got further away from like the body I should have, and or the body that like my body, the size my body wanted to be. And I feel like it got more and more exhausting for like multiple reasons, but that being one of them, of like I just wasn't 14 anymore. And also like I was training so much, and I felt like my there was a lot of noise in my brain because I now knew that what I was doing wasn't really good and was damaging to me, and I like knew exactly the ways in which it was damaging. So it was like definitely something where I like didn't want to be doing this, but I felt like I had to, and I felt a lot of guilt if I didn't. And yeah, it was just kind of like a little mental battle.
Yeah, that's an exhausting weight to carry and a lot of noise in your head, like you said. How did that affect relationships outside of running?
I feel like I still like had such good like bonds and friendships in college. I think like, you know, the team, like you travel with them so much and you're around each other all the time. Also, like my last 2 years of college, my sister had moved to Boise and did grad school there. And so I got to have her around, which was really nice. But I do think like, so I never felt lonely in college or anything, but I do think there were certain like experiences and things that I held myself back from that I wish, like, I don't think my college experience was as full as it could have been. Like I said, it was really good, but probably it was like 75% of like maybe the experience I would have had if there had been more space in my brain to like experience more.
Absolutely. Yeah, that space in your brain is just more limited when your thoughts are so preoccupied with food and body image. And that's a really hard part of this process is dealing with sort of that constant noise, like you said earlier. And you did, after college, go on to run professionally. So tell us about that transition from college to pro.
Well, at the time, and this is very toxic, I was so excited because I knew I could stop working with my therapist and dietitian because I was like, that was like college required. So I was like, okay, now I'm on a pro team. I don't have to do this anymore. But I do feel like I didn't like relapse hugely or anything. I was just like excited to not have to do that and excited for the coaching staff to like not necessarily know about like what I'd been struggling with. But when COVID hit, I got PRP in my Achilles, so I couldn't run for 6 weeks, and I just started like over-exercising really badly. And I, after that, like had just so severely like weakened myself that I kept getting injured. Like every, I'm not kidding, like every 3 months, I would literally like finish my return to running and immediately be injured. And so at that point, then the pro coaching staff and like doctors were like, we would like this is your blood work index are like not promising, and like we know that like something bad's going on. We don't think that like you should keep practicing and competing without like addressing this. So that's when I went to like a inpatient, or not inpatient, but partial hospitalization program for eating disorder recovery, which was like summer of 2021.
What was it like hearing that from USATF, from your coaching staff?
Well, it was terrifying because I was like, I don't want to do that, but I didn't really have a choice because, I mean, like I said, this becomes so much your identity and like a big part of yourself. But at the end of the day, like it was always because of running and always because I wanted to be successful. And so if they were saying, like, oh, you can't run and compete and train unless you do this, I was like, well, there's literally no point in doing it if I can't run. Like, that's the reason for it. And so I was like, obviously I'm gonna go to treatment, but I was really scared for it. But I also do remember like going in the first day or like the days leading up to it being like, oh my gosh, like I'm not gonna have to decide what I eat. Like that's kind of like a huge relief to like not have to do that anymore, to not have to feel that and like have like so many decisions happening in my brain all the time. And to just like have that all that control taken away from me. Like the control was something I had held on to so tightly, but having to let go of it felt like a relief.
Totally. And that relief is something we've brought up a couple of times when you feel like you have, quote unquote, permission from somebody else to put that weight down and let go of that. It can be a huge relief, but at the same time, that control is often a way that you kind of cope with things, that people cope with things. And eating disorders are a mental disorder. They're not always about the food. They're often not about the food. They're about other things going on. So how did you find your mental health once you kind of put that weight down, that coping mechanism down?
Yeah, I mean, I think that like being in a treatment center was actually like really helpful at that time, mainly because of the community of it, of like I was meeting all these other people that like fully understood what I was going through because everyone was going through kind of the same thing. And so having that community around me to like really lean onto and like be able to commiserate with and relate to was so helpful. And then also like my family, like especially my sister, has always been someone that's super important for me. But I do think that like one thing that was hard was like, yes, I was like now like feeling myself appropriately and like making all these changes. And I knew that like it was going to be very positive overall in the long term. But while I was like going through the actions, like there was still just as much noise and like I had just as much like guilt, and shame with food and like the amount that I was eating. I felt like really, really bad all the time of like I just felt guilty about it. So that was definitely like hard to deal with. And I don't think there's any like one tangible thing I did to deal with it. I think it's just like you have to sit through it and it like slowly dissipates. But that was definitely a bit tough.
Sitting with discomfort is hard, but it is a skill that running teaches us. Every time we go run hard or race hard, we have to sit with discomfort.
Yeah, that's so true. I know. I like that was one big like mantra going into treatment. I was like, if I can just treat this like training, then I can do it. Because like if training got really hard or even felt impossible, like I would always do it anyways. So I was like, I know that I have the mental capacity to like get through this.
And I think that's a huge thing with running. Obviously there's struggles with relationship with food, and sometimes it can perpetuate that, but it also shows us strength that we have because we're able to push through so much discomfort, so much pain, mental and physical, with running. And I think that's a strength that you showed throughout this whole process of going through treatment and recovery.
Yeah, and like it's funny because it's probably part of the reason why like so many runners end up having these types of issues because like we are such, high achieving perfectionist type personalities, but it's like also having those traits can help dig you out of the hole as well. So, blessing and a curse for sure.
It totally is. And you ended up, after coming out of recovery or out of the treatment facility, you went on to compete at the Olympic trials pretty much right after. What was that like? How did that feel coming from this really exhausting place to one of the biggest stages of the summer?
Yeah, that was like very emotionally overwhelming, I would say. But I would also like while I was in treatment, I would have to wake up at like 6 and do my training and get to treatment by like 8:30. And then sometimes like have like doubles afterwards and stuff. And so treatment was like 10 hours a day. So it was like very, very exhausting to be training and doing that at the same time. So I remember like when I was discharged, then I had like a week until the trials or something, and I literally felt like I was on vacation. I was like, I know I'm racing the trials next week, but man, I get to sit until 8. Like, this is crazy. Like, it was such a like it was so nice to not be there. And I mean, like I think it was very important, but it's not like fun. So I was so happy to not be there. And yeah, like the trials were re right before I left. I ended up like being public about what I had gone through. I had a YouTube channel and I posted on Instagram pretty often, and I felt weird that I like hadn't said anything, that I like wasn't training with the team right now and I was in a different state and like all this stuff. And then in like one of our sessions that day, we were talking about like our top traits for ourselves that we value outside of our bodies. And one of the things that for me was really important was authenticity. And I was like, that feels weird that this can be such a high value, but right now I'm being very inauthentic. And so I just decided that I wanted to share about it. And I'd been like kind of contemplating it for weeks, but that like tipped me over the edge. And so then I decided to share, and I feel like being open about it going into the trials was like helpful in a way, and also added some pressure in a way, because I felt like I was like, finally I can be like this example that I've wanted to be in the past. But now I feel this pressure of like, if I don't do well, will that like discourage people from deciding to recover, deciding to make these changes? So I felt I put like a lot of pressure on myself to make sure that I was like at my best, which obviously you always want to be anyways, and there's going to be that pressure, but this was like coming from a different place. But then it was also a bit of a blessing, because I felt like I was like, I know that like my body will change and stuff, and like I want to be open about like why that is, so that people aren't like making all these comments about it, or they are, but not to my face at least. So yeah, it was definitely an interesting time. One of the more stressful times in my life.
Absolutely. And you ended up PRing, is that right? In the prelim?
Yeah, I actually PR'd in the final.
In the final. You made the final and then you PR'd, which after all of that mental stress is just one of the most incredible feats that I have ever heard. So, what was that like, kind of lining up, having been so vulnerable and sharing this really personal thing? Was there fear of judgment, or you just mentioned that pressure, feeling like if you didn't do well, that people would maybe be deterred from going through recovery. So, what was that like during the race itself?
Yeah, I mean, going into the final, I definitely was like, well, because I felt really bad in the prelim. I managed to make it to the final with like a small queue, but it was really close, and I was like, I just did not feel good, and that made me really nervous, because I was like, dang, like I know this final is going to be fast, and like I need to be at my best for it, and like you said, I wanted to set a good example. And so going into the final, I was like a wreck, like literally in the call room, like going into the bathroom crying, like I can't do this, I can't start, like I'm gonna fail, it's gonna be embarrassing, like it's just bad. But my coach was like, look, if this was a workout today, you would do it, so like just go out there, run 1K at a time, like run your own race, whatever happens happens, but just like go run. And so that was kind of how I went into it. And I think I started out in like last, and then I just like slowly like picked some people off throughout the race, because I was very much like running my own race kind of. And that was honestly one thing that I was like made me really want to do track again this last year, because I was like, I know like the mental place I was in during those trials and like the way I raced was not good, so I feel like I have more to give. But no, I'm like super proud of how I ran at those trials. Like I was shocked that I ran a PR, and I'm still shocked, honestly. I don't know how it
I mean,
happened.
yeah, that's amazing, because I've had races where I've been, there's been stuff going on personally, and it comes out in my race. It's something that's sometimes hard to separate. So that's a really incredible feat, and I'm wondering if part of that was maybe the relief of sharing that news.
Yeah, I think that did end up helping. Like, even though it felt like a little extra pressure, I think like having told my story a little bit was like very cathartic.
Totally. Yeah, and I think it really has helped a lot of people. And, obviously, like, that's a big burden to put on yourself, saying if I don't succeed, maybe people will be deterred from treatment, which, obviously isn't true, but I can completely understand how you would feel that way. And I think just, being vulnerable about it can really help encourage other athletes to seek treatment. But something that you talked about was it wasn't necessarily your choice and you felt a little bit of resistance towards it. So, what would you say to somebody who's feeling resistance towards seeking treatment?
Well, I think the main thing for me is like it's not if, it's when. It's like if you want to keep running, you will eventually have to confront this. You will eventually have to recover. Like continuing on in those behavior patterns is not sustainable. And for some people, it's more sustainable than others, but it's never going to be sustainable forever. And so, if running really matters to you, like you will have to confront this at some point. So, for me, I'm like, the earlier you do it, the better. Like, you stop, creating new wiring in your brain and you like start repairing the damage that you've done. You stop doing the damage. Like, it's going to be easier to recover if you do it easy. If you do it earlier, and it'll be quicker for your body to like fully recover and bounce back from that damage. So like it's always better earlier, and obviously like that's easy to say, harder to do, but it's definitely true.
Yeah, absolutely. And you then shared that, you went through recovery, you were feeling better, but then you ended up with this major injury, one of your worst injuries. What was that like?
Yeah, that was definitely horrible. Like it's just one of those things where it's like obviously at the time I knew like this injury isn't because like I'm eating more and like making changes. It's like obviously because of like then the 12 years of damage I did. But when it happens, obviously my mind immediately is like, this was all for nothing. Like, why am I doing it? It didn't help me at all. I'm still injured and even worse than I had been before. But yeah, so I got a femoral neck stress fracture like right after the trials, and I had to take 16 weeks off running, and it was really, really hard. But I also think, like, looking back, it was important for me to go through that, like, because I had trained through all of treatments, then like having to take time off of like hard training and sometimes like fully exercise and fully running for sure, like was a good test for me. And then also that injury kind of pushed me to like, okay, I've been like very keyed in on staying like fully professional through like all of treatment, but I think like obviously my body isn't like at full strength yet, and I probably need to be on like a little bit of a different trajectory than most pros. And so that's when I kind of came to the decision that I was going to leave Brooks before my contract was over, and train on my own, but just like go at a different pace. And like that was definitely hard at the time, but and it took me like so long to kind of figure out exactly the best like training place for me. But like I am glad that I was kind of like forced into those decisions because I think it ended up being like really helpful.
Yeah, and I see this a lot when an athlete starts to feel better. Unfortunately, the past catches up to them at the same time. And so it's really easy to blame eating more or the recovery process on or the injury on that process. And it's such a hard thing to convince yourself, like, no, this is not why I'm injured. Maybe the injury could have been worse or could have happened again later if I wasn't doing all these things now. And it's really hard mentally when those things are happening to deal with it.
Yeah, and I think so much of it is because like for me especially, like I started recovery when I got like fully backed into a corner. So it's like obviously like that's the point at which like I also was like in a huge injury cycle. So like, you know, I got that injury, but maybe it would have happened before the trials if I hadn't done anything.
Absolutely. Yeah. And obviously, recovery is kind of an ongoing process in general. So, where do you feel like you are today, having been through all of that? How is your relationship with food and body image?
Yeah, I feel like I definitely wouldn't say that I'm like fully recovered. I think that like my relationship with food is so much better than it ever was, and I think I do a good job of fueling myself. It's just that I still definitely have a lot of noise around food. And like things feel like it's more work to like make decisions around food than I think it should be. Like my boyfriend Spencer is like fully an intuitive eater, and I see the way he chooses food, and I'm like, you literally didn't think about that. Like, how do you do that? I just don't get it. And like body image is tough sometimes, like of still having those beliefs of like I need to look a certain way to be successful in running, or like, oh, if I were a little bit smaller, but I've been better, or especially like around bad workouts or races, feeling like using my body as a scapegoat, kind of always thinking that's the reason things would go wrong instead of like the 100 other reasons it could be. So yeah, I wouldn't say I'm fully recovered, but I feel like I get like a little bit closer all the time. Like I'm like inching my way towards it. Yeah, because it's been like 3.5 years since I entered treatment, which is kind of crazy. And I definitely thought that like I would be fully recovered by now, but it's a slow process.
Yeah, and thank you for sharing that. I know it's a really hard thing to talk about, and it is an ongoing process. And I think that's really encouraging for other people who are struggling right now to hear is that, recovery, you have good days, you have bad days, and you're still able to ultimately kind of be on the right trajectory towards taking care of your body. One of my favorite things is that you PR'd this past year, and you shared that, being in a bigger body, you PR'd, and that was something that your younger self never would have imagined could happen. So tell us about that. What was that like?
Yeah, I think this year was like super gratifying for me because like recovery is such a long process and it's often not linear. Like there were a few years after I started recovery that I was running and I was running fine, but like I didn't run any PRs. Like I wasn't that far off, but I just felt like, you know, there wasn't like any obvious progress and I was still like kind of getting some injuries and it was a bit tough. But then this year, I felt like I had like some really big breakthroughs throughout the year, like both mentally and physically. And it just felt like amazing to be able to see the stats on paper of like, you have gotten better. You are the best you've ever been. Because like, you know, like type A perfectionist, I want to see concrete data. So yeah, it was like really amazing to see. And like, it just made me really excited and hopeful for the future because I feel like I'm just kind of starting to like come through on the other side a little bit of like, okay, now I can really see what my potential is. Whereas before I felt like I had reached the end, like I'd reached my breaking point and I didn't know if I'd ever get to a point again where I felt like, you know, I had all this potential ahead of me, but this year kind of gave me that hope.
Do you feel like that's changed your relationship with running?
Yeah, this year I like started enjoying racing so much more. I wanted to add races to the calendar. Like I wanted to race more and more. And when I wasn't racing, I like really missed it. So it was just like a really good sign because I think at a certain point too, I had started just having so much pressure around races, and they all felt like scary and like big tests, whereas now it just feels like a fun like opportunity to like go run really hard and see what I can do. And I don't know if maybe part of that's just because like I wasn't racing as seriously for a while, so there's a bit of n more novelty to it, but hopefully it continues, 'cause yeah, racing this year was very fun.
That's so great. And it's so nice when running, I think having been through kind of the fire and coming out the other side, you realize running is, it's just running and it's something that just gives you the strength and all these things, but it's not all of who you are. And is that something that you feel like you've been able to separate a bit more as you've gone through this process?
I think a little bit, but like I also still really want to continue to work on that. Because I also think like throughout this process, I've gotten a lot more into like the content creation and storytelling side of things. And I've really enjoyed like getting to be creative and like video editing and coming up with ideas for that. So I feel like some of my identity has now become a little bit more of like a creator and like more like almost artistic sort of person, which is crazy because I'm like so bad at art in general. So I feel like some of it's gone a little bit more towards that, but that's still like related to running, you know, like in a little way. So I feel like I'm still trying to find like more ways that I can like pull my identity out of just running and performance. And like obviously that's always going to be part of who I am, but like I do want to become more well-rounded. But yeah, I'm not going to give advice for that one because I don't know how to do it.
That's okay. You don't need to know how to do it. You're doing great. Everyone loves your YouTube. Your YouTube channel is amazing. Your content is great. The message is great, which I love. And I also just want to check in. You're coming off of a surgery. How are you doing?
I feel like you probably noticed like this side of my mouth doesn't move a lot right now.
Wow.
Because like a nerve was kind of damaged, but they said it'll heal. So other than that, the surgery went really well. I had like a solid cystic mass in my neck, which was just so random. Like they don't know why it happened or anything, but got it removed, so that's good. And yeah, hopefully the recovery will be pretty straightforward. Yeah, I'm just hoping like I can't like smile or laugh normally right now, which is like difficult because I mean smiling and laughing is an important part of life. So
It
yeah, they said
is.
it'll take like a couple months to get back to like full capacity, but in the meantime, I guess I just have to do like face exercises.
Just practice smiling in the mirror.
Yeah, just for hours.
There you go. Oh, that's amazing. Well, what's next for you, Allie? What's coming up this year?
Yeah, so I'm like right now I'm taking a little downtime and then I'm planning on doing some road racing probably in the spring. And then it'll kind of be a track and trail hybrid season from like May through July because they just like it's US champs for both of them this year. And they just unfortunately overlap. So I'm gonna try to do both, but if it's not working, I'll pick one. But yeah, that's kind of my plan for the next year. I haven't planned after USA's for track. I mean, it's at the end of July, so that's like pretty late anyways.
Late. Yeah, super late. Well, that's so exciting. Thank you so much for sharing your incredible story. I would love to finish with just having you maybe give like one piece of advice or one tool that you use all the time that you find really helpful. Just kind of speaking to younger athletes who might be struggling or somebody who's needing to seek help but isn't quite ready to do that.
Yeah, I think like what you kind of alluded to earlier is super important to keep in mind, which is that like it's easy to attribute any success you have to what you're doing, the behaviors you have, the body you have. But the reality is that like you could have always been more successful if you were fueling correctly, and you just don't know that. And that's something that I've always tried to remind myself that like what I thought made me successful might have actually been holding me back. And I think like after going through recovery and starting to see like a new potential in myself and my racing, I realize it really is true of like the things that I did for so long that I thought were necessary for success were only holding me back. And like that's, I mean, it's just great to realize and know.
That's such a great piece of advice. And I know these topics are really difficult to talk about, but you have done such an incredible job being vocal about it and sharing your story. And I know that it's helping so many athletes. So thank you so much for doing that, Allie. And I want to wrap up on a light note of our rapid fire questions. So these are some fun rapid fire nutrition related questions. Don't worry, I won't ask you your favorite band. Those questions always
You're
stress me out.
like,
I'm like, Jonas Brothers, I
Obviously.
don't know. All right. Obviously. So that was the first band that came to my mind just then. That's why I'm terrible at rapid fire. Okay, these ones should be easier. So what is your go-to pre-run snack?
Probably like oatmeal, but I guess if it was just like a snack. I like those Martin bars. I don't know how to pronounce that company. Never
Don't
will.
really either.
Yeah, but the like the Morton solids, because they're just like super simple, and easy to digest.
Perfect. When you have oatmeal, what do you put in it?
Usually like apples and some protein powder, and then I'll put granola on top.
Yum. Like apple pie. That sounds good.
Yeah, delicious.
What would you pick for your last meal?
Oh wow. Okay, you said these weren't going to be hard. Now I have to choose the last meal I'm ever going to eat. Maybe I'd go with mac and cheese. I do
Oh,
love mac and
cool.
cheese.
Do you have like a brand that you like or like a homemade version?
Ew, yeah, it's got to be homemade.
Yeah, yum. That's a good one. That's a new one. What is your favorite dessert?
Cheesecake. I think I just like cheese.
Cheesecake.
That's the theme here.
Yeah, I'm gonna say it's a cheesy meal. I love it. Cheese can be, it's so versatile. You know,
It
it's like the
really can.
potato of dairy. It can be anything.
It is such a good statement. The potato of
Okay, cheesecake, love it. What is your least favorite food?
dairy. Now this is controversial, but it's chocolate.
Really? What about it?
Everything. I don't like the smell and I don't like the taste. So
Wow.
yeah, just I've never liked it. I don't know. It's just
That
weird.
is a new one. I haven't heard that before. There's no judgment. I have controversial foods I don't like actually sweet potatoes. I don't like sweet potatoes, and that's a controversial one.
Yeah, that is. My dad doesn't like them, and I'm like convinced that he's just like deciding to not like them because he's very against like the entire like healthified things. He's like, no, regular potatoes are so good. You should never mess with them. I'm like, we didn't mess with them, Dad. These are different foods. Anyways,
Grow like
he
that.
doesn't
That sounds like
like
a dad thing, dad hill to die
them
on.
either.
If you could travel anywhere in the world for a food experience, where would you go?
Maybe Bali. I feel like I've never
Ooh.
been, but all the pictures I've seen of food there just look so good.
Yeah, I love any Asian cuisine, so I'm sure that would be good.
Yeah.
What is your go-to lazy meal, and is it mac and cheese?
No, probably like breakfast for dinner. Like last night,
Oh,
I came
yeah.
back and I made pancakes for dinner because like we didn't have much food and it's so quick.
Brenner, love it.
Such a good one.
And the last one is, what is your favorite coffee or tea drink?
Ooh, it always changes. I love the seasonal ones, but I would say it's the vanilla sweet cream cold brew from
Ooh,
Starbucks that
that's a good
probably
one.
was the most ordered drink of the year.
If you had like a Starbucks wrapped, it would be that.
Yes.
Yeah, awesome. Well, where can people find you, Allie, if they want to keep up with you this year?
Yeah, I am at Allie underscore Ostrander on Instagram and then Allie Ostrander on YouTube. I also have a TikTok, but I don't post there that much. I got on the TikTok wave late and I don't fully understand the app. It makes me feel old to be on there.
I'm with you.
and then my boyfriend and I actually have a podcast as well called Every Step of the
Amazing.
Way. So, yeah.
Love it. Well, thank you so much for being here today, Allie. It was so great talking with you, and I hope you have a great season.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much for being here and being a part of the Fueling Forward podcast. I hope you enjoyed today's episode with Allie Ostrander. If you'd like to keep up with Allie, you can find her on Instagram or YouTube at Allie_Ostrander. And I've linked in the show notes some information about her YouTube and what was referenced in the podcast today, her letter called Dear Body, I Love You, published in Milesplit. Next week's episode will be a Q&A with me, and if you haven't already, you can submit your question to me to be answered on air on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.